everyone, and welcome to today's edition of the Maya Ag Life Daily News Report here on this Tuesday. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In the show today, Taylor Chalstrom has a report discussing citrus mealybug identification and management, and I'll have a look at regional and national agricultural news, beginning with regional ag news right after this.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns on September 28th and 29th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this two-day conference features two concurrent CE tracks for both PCAs and CCAs. Earn the DPR and CCA credits you need. Network on our trade show floor and join us in giving away scholarships and honorariums presented by Western Region CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Visit progressivecrop.com/conference.
56 years after Cesar Chavez's historic march, the United Farm Workers is once again headed to Sacramento. On August 3rd, the labor organization kicked off a 24-day, 335-mile march from Delano, California, to the state capitol to pressure Governor Gavin Newsom into signing Assembly Bill 2183. The bill, which is currently awaiting a vote by the state Senate, would let farm workers vote by mail in union elections. AB 2183 is similar to a bill vetoed last year by Newsom, who said he opposed it because of inconsistency and procedural issues. As his colleague Gene Guerrero wrote in September, the governor's veto was seen as a slap to the face by a labor organization that had canvassed on his behalf during a recall vote. In response, the UFW marched in protest from French Laundry to a fancy restaurant where Newsom infamously dined during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic to Plum Jack Winery, which he co-founded. But that march was compared with this year's. Over the last 2 weeks, a core group of 26 UFW members have been walking as far as 22 miles a day in the blistering San Joaquin Valley sun with temperatures topping 100 degrees. That kind of trek alone will take a toll on a human body. The wear and tear caused by the elements is something Teresa Maldonado Mendoza, one of the core marchers, is all too familiar with. The 61-year-old Lamont, California resident, has worked in the harvesting of produce, including cilantro, parsley, oranges, and sweet potatoes, since she came to the United States. Maldonado Mendoza said the march has been exhausting, but the support they've received from communities they walk through has been the fuel pushing them through. The UFW marchers are scheduled to arrive in Sacramento on August 26th, where there will be a big rally. Their arrival to the Capitol coincides on the same day that Governor Newsom declared California Farm Worker Day last year. When it comes to climate change, cows have taken a reputational hit. These belching bovines have been villainized for releasing methane, a greenhouse gas with more than 25 times the heat-trapping power of carbon dioxide. But now a growing number of Bay Area farmers are working to repolish the image of the humble dairy cow, recasting their role from gaseous emitters to carbon-capturing machines and powering farmers' ability to fight the impacts of climate change. Chief among them is Albert Strauss, founder and owner of Strauss Family Creamery and Dairy in Marshall, an unincorporated town on the northeast shore of Tamales Bay. One of the first in the nation to take his farm organic in the early 90s, Strauss has garnered attention for feeding his cows seaweed, which has cut down on their methane output by more than 80%, according to research from the University of California, Davis. But supplementing feed is just one part of his mission to make climate-positive milk. Strauss has deployed several strategies to neutralize his carbon footprint and offset the gases escaping from his cows, including installing a methane digester that traps manure's harmful CH4 from seeping into the atmosphere. He then uses that trap gas to power trucks and farm equipment in lieu of diesel. Strauss is also boosting the carbon power of his soils by spreading compost, planting windbreaks to keep the dirt in place, and rotating cows to other pastures to give his grasslands a rest. It's all part of his plan to sequester nearly 2,000 metric tons of carbon and methane annually. While Strauss is considered a pioneer of sustainable farming, he's one of an emerging breed of farmers focused on shoving carbon back into the ground, a process that Jeff Creek, director of rangeland and agroecosystem management at the Carbon Cycle Institute, calls a recarbonization of the land. Creek asserts that carbon farming, a broad suite of agricultural practices aimed at sequestering atmospheric carbon into the soil and root systems, represents a huge opportunity to restore lands and watersheds. Despite these climate-friendly shifts, the dairy industry has a long way to go. According to UN research, the dairy sector alone accounts for about 4% of global gas emissions. However, climate-friendly farming is about to get a huge boost from the feds. Recently, President Joe Biden signed into law the climate legislation that will usher in an unprecedented shift towards renewable energy and funnel nearly $40 billion to agricultural conservation programs. RJO Produce, one of the nation's most innovative agricultural businesses, will enter a new era when it begins its 30th year in 2023. Renowned for bringing relationship-driven fair business practices to the produce industry, RJO is a brainchild of brothers Rob and John O'Rourke. In 1993, the O'Rourkes launched RJO with a goal of providing customers with the personal service and trusted information they needed to purchase only the highest quality fruits and vegetables. From their first day in business, the brothers made it a priority to send their team in a growing regions where they could see and report firsthand about the commodities and quality in the field. The company's three-decade-strong reputation includes a commitment to building ag industry talent through its Bird Dog Field Inspection Program, a hands-on internship program created by RJO and supported by many universities specializing in agriculture, giving ag science and produce industry students real-life ag industry experience. In addition to helping educate the future of the industry, the program provides critically important quality control by inspecting products prior to shipment to RJO clients through the United States. This program not only grows talent, but it keeps that talent in the ag sector long term. In addition, RJO is known for revolutionizing relationships with retail partners, acting as its retail customers' agent in the fields and ensuring they receive the best information to enable them to get the best products at the best price. This includes RJO's Bird Dog app that provides quantifiable scores for produce and exacting matches to customer quality specs, and the Bird Dog quality scoring system that guides RJO's team in meeting customers' specific quality specifications, thanks to in-depth scoring of key attributes. Located in the heart of Central California, in the nation's largest and most fertile agricultural growing region, RJO Produce is an innovator in the ag commodity brokerage industry, offering a wide variety of services to help clients work smart and maximize profitability. Higher retail prices of organic fresh produce during the second quarter of 2022 generated a 3.7% increase in total organic dollars, but also contributed to a decline in organic volume of 2.8%, according to the quarter to 2022 organic produce performance report issued by the Organic Produce Network and category partners. Overall, organic fresh produce pricing increased by 6.7% for quarter two 2022 compared to the same period last year, with sales for the quarter topping $2.4 billion. At the same time, conventional producers' average price increased by more than 9% compared to the same period last year, with total sales of $18.1 billion. The quarter two 2022 organic produce performance report uses Nielsen IQ syndicated data to track and report the performance over organic fresh produce and specifically the top 20 leading organic categories. The report suggests consumers are watching grocery spending carefully as inflation takes its toll on higher priced items, which would include many organic fresh produce items. Seeing a decline in organic volume for quarter two suggests food budgets are under stress in many U.S. households, according to Tom Barnes, CEO of Category Partners. He said it's common to see budget-centric consumers trade down, substituting for lower-priced conventional items or shifting from a high-priced organic item to a cheaper organic alternative from another category. Barnes believes organic substitution explains why organic bananas had a particularly strong quarter in quarter two. Bananas are one of the lowest priced organic fruits and have the smallest price spread between conventional and organic, he says. For the quarter, while nearly every other organic fruit declined in volume, bananas increased in both dollars and volume. So for budget-focused consumers still wanting to buy organic, bananas provided a cost-effective option. Suppliers need to be aware of shifting consumer purchase drivers and develop strategies to keep shoppers buying, he said. Geographically, all four regions of the U.S. showed increases in sales and decreases in volume for the quarter. Organic performance during quarter two 2022 was weakest in the Northeast, where dollars increased by a mere 0.4% and volume fell by 6.1%. The South continues to show the most improvement year over year, and with a fairly low ACV compared to the Northeast and West, data suggests the South is poised for continued growth. And despite a minor decline in volume, OPN co-founder and CEO Matt Seeley is bullish on the long-term prospects for growth of organic fresh produce. He says while there is likely some difficult months ahead, the long-term potential for continued organic fresh produce growth remains unchanged. He says inflation and supply chain challenges have impacted pricing in the short term. However, organic fresh produce will remain an important component of weekly food shopping as consumers look for healthy, safe, and nutritious products for their family. Now, in addition to bananas having an exceptional quarter, the berry category that includes strawberries, blueberries, raspberries, and blackberries led the way in dollar sales, topping $430 million. Organic blackberries generated the largest percent increase in dollars, gaining 27.6% year over year, followed by tomatoes, onions, and raspberries. Conversely, blueberries posted the largest decline in dollars, with bell peppers and squash also showing noticeable declines. Berries and salads continue to be the top organic produce categories by total sales, responsible for nearly 40% of all organic produce dollars.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
Ever seen a bunch of little white specks around citrus fruit pedicles and stems? Ever looked down and seen an above average number of fruit on the ground as well? What you're seeing is citrus mealybug and its repercussions. The pest, according to UCCE Citrus IPM advisor Sandeepa Gautam, has been around for a while, but it's one to always keep in mind during the season, especially since it can also pose aesthetic issues for fresh fruit citrus.
They have been around, and they were normally, traditionally thought to be controlled by natural enemies. There are predators and parasites, whatever we can find in the nature. The populations were usually kept in check used by natural enemies. But that hasn't been the case in the last 2-3 years, because we've been hearing growers and PCAs complain about mealybug problems in their block, and that acreage is increasing, which is why my team started looking into it. It looks like it's spreading in Ivanhoe, Mariposa area. And compared to, say, 2020, 2021 had more blocks infested. 2022, it seems like it's, you know, it's expanding in acres. It's a sap-sucking pest, and it's all the numbers game with insects. If there is more number of insects drinking from the plant, then it could reduce plant vigor, it could reduce the yield, and depending on where it is feeding, they can cause considerable fruit drop. They like to go to the fruit, say, around June, July, when they complete their first generation and the second generation is out and about. They like to go to the fruit, and they love feeding on fruit. And they usually develop clusters, because one female can lay up to 600 eggs in her lifetime, and those, most of the eggs are in an egg sac, and they hatch and they start feeding. They do move, but they like to live in cluster too. And indirect damage would be because they are sap sucking insect, they drink from the sap and they have to process all the sap, and in that process they produce a lot of honeydew, and it could cover fruit, and sooty mold would grow on them, and sooty mold cover fruit. Although they can be washed, it gets downgraded in the packing house, so there is direct effects.
Another aspect of citrus mealybug that makes them a challenging pest is that researchers don't actually know too much about their seasonal phenology, specifically in the San Joaquin Valley, including when and where they're present in a tree, how they're moving, and how many generations there are in a season.
One would think cool winters will kill off most of the overwintering population, but like the winters that we have had in past several years, maybe it's not contributing enough to that winter mortality, which may be one of the reasons that we're seeing higher increase in mealybug incidents. When we collected from some of the blocks that were pre-infested in last year in January, we're still seeing some, you know, immatures and a lot of egg sacs. Usually, again, we don't have enough data, but based on some of the work that we have done, it seems like mealybug has 4 to 5 generations in 1 year. And most of them, this hot weather is you know, when the fruit is developing is when they're most damaging.
As Gautam alluded to, citrus mealybug has historically been controlled by biological predators, but many of these only occur naturally in coastal and southern California regions, leaving citrus growers in the Central Valley to seek out chemical or cultural control measures.
There are parasites and there are predators called mealybug destroyer. It's a cryptogenous species. Growers could release that, or a parasitoid that's called anaragus species, they could release that. And we looked at some of the insecticide registered in California to control mealybug, and based on our results, most of the insecticide that are registered in citrus did significantly reduce the number of insects compared to the untreated control. So if growers are making applications to targeted California red scale, which most of the growers are doing, that would probably have some effect on mealybugs as well.
This is Taylor Charlstrom for MyAgLife.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian Solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
The USDA has announced another phase of assistance will be forthcoming to commodity and specialty crop producers impacted by natural disasters in 2020 and 2021. Over 18,000 producers will soon be mailed new or updated pre-filled disaster applications to offset eligible crop losses. About $6.4 billion has already reached 165,000 producers through the Farm Service Agency's Emergency Relief Program. They knew when they announced ERP in May that they would have additional applications to send near the end of the summer as they received new information and found producers left out of the first data set they used. That according to USDA Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation Robert Bonney. FSA will mail those pre-filled applications in late August to producers who have potential eligible losses. Bonney says he's proud of his team's continued efforts to help over 18,000 producers who need assistance. For more information, contact your local FSA office. While the Farm Bill is commonly thought of as a piece of agricultural legislation, the nutrition title of the bill is just as important and just as beneficial to farmers and ranchers. Farm News reporter Michael Clements.
Over the years, there's been some talk of splitting farm programs and nutrition programs in the Farm Bill to separate bills. However, Utah Farm Bureau member Tyson Roberts says the two programs need to be connected. Roberts is a produce grower that sells direct to consumers.
I am the sixth generation on our family farm. Over the years, we've done a lot of different things, cattle and a lot of grain crops. Got more into vegetables as I was growing up. We switched more to vegetables than specifically direct marketed vegetables. So now about 85% of our crops go directly to consumers at farmers markets.
Customers at the farmers markets can use their SNAP benefits funded by the Farm Bill to purchase fresh local food.
It's been beneficial to have that option available to those in our community that are most in need, giving them the opportunity to buy the freshest, high quality produce and use their SNAP benefits to receive that. And it helps us boost our sales as well, opening up to more customers.
Roberts says farm programs and the nutrition program go hand in hand.
It's tough to get a farm bill passed that has all of the things the farmers need without the nutrition aspect of it, because you have lawmakers on both sides of the aisle representing a lot of different demographics, and those urban legislators need to see something in the farm bill that's benefiting their constituents.
Michael Clements, Washington.
President Joe Biden's new climate law offers a major expansion in tax credits for companies that capture and store carbon emissions. Reuters News says that could give the ethanol industry a significant boost towards achieving its climate goals. The ethanol industry intends to use carbon capture and storage technology to reach its goal of net zero emissions by 2050. A group of projects that could benefit from the expanded credits is a series of pipeline proposals in the Midwest that could capture and transport ethanol plant emissions. Three companies intend to put up over 3,600 miles of pipelines from ethanol plants in six states to underground carbon storage sites. The three companies say the projects have the potential of capturing up to 39 million tons of carbon every year. That could potentially mean more than $3.3 billion in tax credits for the businesses. The pipelines are currently in the permitting stages in each state.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
Almond Girl Jenny, or as she's known in real life, Jenny Holterman, has been blogging about agriculture and almond growing for 9 years. As social media evolved, so too has her presence. She and her husband, who grow almonds near Wasco and Shafter, now direct market their crop through the Almond Girl label. Jenny's latest effort is an Adopt-a-Tree program where elementary school classes can adopt an almond tree and follow it for a season. The program, complete with state-approved curriculum for 3rd to 5th graders, starts with harvest and takes students through bloom. The program also complements Jenny's longtime effort to help educate those not in agriculture about the industry's importance.
It all started with a blog that I created about, close to 9 years ago now. I started the blog and, you know, it was back when everybody was blogging. That was like the thing to do. And it was a way for me to kind of just share our story and be more, you know, there was a lot of wrong information about farming on the internet. And it was a place for me to just put more accurate information out there and kind of share what farming was really like. And, you know, as social media got more popular and then I got more active on social media and the blog morphed to more of just a platform to be more vocal about advocacy things. And, you know, then we had children and it morphed into kind of just sharing our story about raising kids on the farm. And then 2 years ago, I started direct marketing our almonds and now it's an e-commerce website. So it's kind of just changed throughout the times. And so now Almond Girl is our brand that we direct market some of our almonds and a place that we also share about our homestead journey and our farming adventures and all the things in between.
Jenny and her husband, Tim, a fourth generation farmer, produce almonds with his family in the Shafter and Wasco area as Holterman Brothers Ag. Some of the ground goes back to the early 1900s when Tim's grandfather farmed it. Although they now grow only almonds, Jenny recalled his grandfather said at one time he grew 40 different crops.
Yeah, so we farm today with my husband's family, with his dad and brother and their families. And it goes back to a fourth generation farm, started in 1919 in Wasco and been a family farm. We farm some of the same property that was farmed then and continuing the family tradition of farming. His family started planting almonds in about the 70s and in about the early 2000s, I believe, it morphed into all just almonds. So I think at one point his grandfather said that he farmed like 40 different crops in his life. So he was quite diversified. But now we are just almonds on our farm today. And about 4 years ago, my husband and I were blessed to be able to buy some of our own property ourselves. So we have our house on our ranch today in Shafter, where we have a little homestead farm as well and raising our children here in the country.
Jenny herself is a fourth generation farmer, having grown up on a farm near Chico. As a kid, she said she didn't know anything other than agriculture. But as she grew up, she realized that not everybody had the same knowledge about farming. Over the years, she has connected with numerous teachers through her Almond Girl Jenny media sites. But Jenny credited Julie Cates, a sixth grade teacher in Visalia, for planting the seed for the Adopt-a-Tree program. The dairy industry already has an Adopt-a-Cow program for classes, so Jenny figured, why not adopt a tree?
You know, I grew up farming as well. My family is also fourth generation farmers in the Chico area. So I grew up in farming and I didn't know any different. I thought that, you know, everyone had that life. And I loved, you know, being immersed in everything about the farm. And you know, as a young child, it was part of our everyday life, living and growing up on the farm. And, you know, as I got older, I definitely saw that not everybody has that same lifestyle and has that same knowledge about the food that they're, you know, eating and where their food is coming from and the disconnect there. As I, you know, got more into Almond Girl and social media, I was able to connect with people from all over the country and all over different walks of life, but some teachers that I've been able to connect with. And I've had the opportunity to be a guest in a lot of classrooms virtually and in person and be able to just talk about our farm and to talk about farming in general. And there's one teacher in particular, Julie Cates, up a little bit north of here. She's a great teacher who involves farmers into her classroom. And we got talking about, you know, how other programs, there's, you know, adopt a cow programs and things like that where you can, you know, bring kind of the farm into the classroom more so. And I was like, you know what? I have never heard of an adopt a tree program. How cool would that be that you guys could just follow the life cycle of a tree and it would be a way for me to share more about our farm throughout the school year rather than just, you know, one day in the classroom. So I did research on other like similar programs and ways, you know, what resources are available and reached out to Agriculture in the Classroom. Here in the California Ag in the Classroom has a ton of great resources that are free to classrooms, to teachers. And, you know, some teachers aren't aware of that or maybe don't know how to access some of that. So I wanted to bring that into my program as well, since those are all free to children, to teachers anyways. But then also, you know, have an opportunity where I could come into your classroom virtually, do different Zoom chats, and as well as like recorded videos throughout the year to show what's going on, and a way to connect the kids to the food that, you know, in their own backyard, probably food that they're eating, and they don't know, you know, how it got there.
The Adopt a Tree program is designed for third through fifth graders. As part of the program, Jenny compiles several different lesson plans in a packet. The plans are from California Agriculture in the Classroom, and each one lets the teacher know what state requirements it meets. Agriculture, and almonds in particular, lend themselves to a myriad different subjects, ranging from plant science to spelling.
I have partnered with Agriculture in the Classroom to get those free resource lesson plans that they have. And really, the almond lesson plans that they have and their wheelhouses and they're already developed in their archives are kind of geared toward that range already. So they have a lot of great lesson plans already available for that age range. So I wanted to stick with what almond lesson plans they already have available. There is so much available to learn about almonds. Like I said, I'll be giving the teachers two lesson plan packets really throughout two different times throughout the year. And in one of these packets, they have like 3 to 5 different lessons in one of the packets that they're going to be getting. So they are essentially getting like 6 to 10 lesson plans throughout the whole year. That's a lot for a teacher. So, I mean, they can incorporate what they want. They can use them all. They can use one of them, whatever they want to adapt to their classroom. But there's information there on, you know, obviously plant sciences and the science world, learning about life cycles of things. There's information on, you know, their spelling and grammar and, you know, different words to learn and how to spell these different words. There's things on, I mean, so much different things. There's like even recipes and things that they can try and taste in the classrooms. There is basically, I mean, anything that they want to adapt in their curriculum, we can bring almonds in throughout the year and to try and, you know, incorporate that into what they, you know, they have to do. And the lesson plans are great for Mag in the Classroom because they're already, they tell you what curriculum they meet and what needs that they have to meet their state standards.
For more information or to sign up for the Adopt a Tree program, go to Jenny's website at almondgirl.com, then click on Adopt a Tree on the left-hand side. The deadline to sign up for the program is September 15th.
So it's all available on our website at almondgirl.com. head over to the shop, and the Adopt a Tree program is listed in there. All the details of what it includes and a little bit more about me, so you know about our farming operation. And the deadline to apply is September 15th. That is to make sure that we're in harvest right now, and I want to kick it off with harvest and get the classrooms involved in the harvest process as well. So the deadline is September 15th, and you can get all the information at almondgirl.com in our shop.
Too bad I'm not back in school. This sounds like a fun way to get kids more engaged in agriculture while also learning about reading, writing, and arithmetic or other school subjects. This is Vicki Boyd reporting for My Ag Life.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.